This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. 60 years ago, United States Marines waded ashore on the then obscure island of Guadalcanal. The battle that followed lasted 6 months and changed the tide of the Second World War in the Pacific. Some veterans of the battle already are gathered on Guadalcanal to mark the anniversary. Martin Clemens was one of the heroes of that battle. Though he expected to be there, he had to stay home in Australia on doctor's orders. But when the Marines first arrived on Guadalcanal, Martin Clemens was there waiting for them. In our latest National Geographic radio expedition, NPR's Neil Conan reports from Guadalcanal.
After the Marines landed, they quickly took their main objective, the airfield that the Japanese were building, and set up positions to defend it. One outpost was right here. This is the mouth of a stream called the Tenaru River, and the Marines dug in right on the beach here. A few days later, the nervous young riflemen here heard something and looked up in astonishment. It was a parade. A military parade. A small group of Solomon Islanders with rifles on their shoulders, led by a scrawny, bearded white man holding the Union Jack.
We weren't very many of us, just about eight of us, I suppose. And we just marched along with my dog in the front. And we came down to the beach where there was an outpost there. And I couldn't shout at him. I tried to, but my voice wouldn't work. Anyway, somehow or other, we managed to make contact without any shooting.
Martin Clemens was one of the coast watchers, extraordinary men who hiked up into the hills when the Japanese invaded the Solomon Islands and stayed alone behind enemy lines to report on Japanese activities. It was, to put it mildly, incredibly dangerous. Most of the coast watchers were Australians. Martin Clemens was a Scot, educated at Cambridge, who arrived in the Solomons in 1939. Now, the Solomon Islands aren't really close to anything. This is a long chain of islands that stretches across the Southwest Pacific. There are several big mountainous islands, like Guadalcanal, and lots of tiny coral islets. A few hundred Europeans lived here before the war, and about 100,000 islanders, mostly Melanesians. Martin Clemens became the district officer on Guadalcanal, a combination colonial administrator, judge, and police chief.
The Guadalcanal police force wasn't very large because they were fairly law-abiding people. There were only 14 of them, so we had 14 rifles.
Even after Pearl Harbor, these hot, distant islands seemed an improbable theater of war, but the Japanese came ever closer. Most of the Europeans fled in panic. In his diary, Clemens wrote that he felt terribly alone. In early March 1942, with Japanese planes roaring overhead, he spoke with the frightened leaders of Guadalcanal's villages.
I called a lot of the headmen in to tell them what was going on. And there was a crowd of about 300 or 400 outside my office. And they said, "What's going to happen?" And I said, "Look here, if you just do what I tell you, we'll all work together, then we'll make it."
It was, Clemens said later, a flimsy pledge. But had he not given it, and more important, had the islanders not believed it, things might have turned out very differently. The Japanese came to Guadalcanal in May, and Clemens soon realized that they were going to build an airfield.
They tried to get the Solomon Islanders to go and work for them, which they did. And of course they came back every night and told me the progress of the building.
In turn, Clemens passed the news along to the Allied command by radio. Of course, the Japanese could also hear his messages, so Clemens had to pack up his big, heavy radio equipment and hike on up through the swamps and jungle into the mountains. The men who carried the equipment for Clemens and his policemen were all Solomon Islanders, any one of whom could have given him away. Despite Japanese threats and bribes, almost all of them remained loyal. Historian Richard Frank says there were two reasons why.
One was that the treatment they'd received from Clemens and his colonial administration had been fair and just. Secondly, the Japanese on Guadalcanal, as they had done elsewhere in Asia, rather rapidly established their tremendous sense of racial superiority over everyone, and the natives picked this up very quickly and resented it.
There was another reason, the arrival of Police Sergeant Major Jacob Vuza. He was from Guadalcanal originally, but He'd served most of his career elsewhere in the Solomons. Vuza was a stubborn, barrel-chested man who would become the Solomon Islands' greatest military hero. To begin with, Clemens sent him to pacify the most troublesome area on Guadalcanal.
It was his district, Tasimboko, that were being obstreperous. And so I sent Vuza down there to keep them quiet. He was related down there, so he had quite a good effect on them.
After months in the mountains, though, Clemens and his policemen were just about at the end of their ropes. Hungry, exhausted, and frustrated, he knew the Japanese were almost done with the airfield and that there could be little hope for him when they finished. Hints of an American landing seemed like false hopes.
I got very depressed the night before, and I actually wrote in my diary, "There's nothing going to happen after all."
That was the night of August 6th. Having gone to bed with no dinner, Clemens wrote in his diary, "I slept pretty solidly, and it was not the dawn which awakened me."
Anyway, the next morning, we heard this terrific bombardment, and we had to wait until all the mist cleared. And here's this enormous fleet. And one of the Solomon Island scouts rushed up to me with tears in his eyes, said, "Master, Japan fleet, he come." I said, "They've been damn silly."
Clemens turned on his radio and heard excited pilots talking in American accents. After a couple of days, he led his men down to the beach and into the American perimeter. He attached himself to the Marines' intelligence staff, providing crucial knowledge of the local area, the trails, the river crossings, and the true difficulty of the wild country beyond the coastal plain. His policemen became scouts for the Marines and accompanied patrols and collected information from villagers on Japanese activities. Frank Adon, a sergeant in the Marine Raider Battalion, led some of those patrols.
We had a coast watcher that was Martin Clemens, and he would send the native guides out with instructions and where we wanted to go, so they helped us a lot.
On one of those patrols, Jacob Vuza was captured by the Japanese.
Of course, he was carrying an American flag, and they tied him up to a tree over an ant bed and stuck him in the ribs and in the face, and he didn't say anything and passed out.
The Japanese soldiers took Vuza along for further questioning. They were headed up the same beach that Clemens had marched along just a couple of days before. A ferocious battle erupted when they hit the Marine lines, and somehow Vuza crawled away during the night, bleeding from bayonet wounds to the chest and throat.
I got a call about just after 7 to say that Vuza had arrived badly wounded and wanted to talk to me. And I went down and took a detailed notes of what he had to say, and I also took a sort of dying statement from him to give to his wife. But he survived. He was amazing.
With 16 pints of blood and treatment from Navy doctors, Jacob Vuza not only survived, he returned to the battle for Guadalcanal. He was later knighted Sir Jacob Vuza. He lived on Guadalcanal until his death in 1985. Martin Clemens, too, earned many honors, including Britain's Military Cross. He lives outside of Melbourne, Australia, with his wife, Anne. For Radio Expeditions, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News, on Guadalcanal.
More on the Battle of Guadalcanal tomorrow. Pictures and maps are on our website, npr.org. Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR News and the National Geographic Society.